Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
As it's been widely reported, I sat down with Kyrie Irving and his agent a few weeks back. I don't know the exact date. We try to do this every summer, whether their contract's coming up or not. And there was several scenarios discussed at that time. I don't feel it's appropriate really get into the details of all those scenarios. And so, again, I don't know the sources of the report that there was a trade request made. I read it in the media, like some of you reported and some of you read. You know, we talked about a wide range of possibilities in the future. At that time, we had not signed Kobe yet as their general manager, and there are a few other moves I believe that have been made that weren't made at that time. So, you know, these things are fluid. We think that Kyrie Irving is, you know, one of the best guards in the NBA. You know, he's part of a championship, 3 years straight in finals. We value his talent.
He's a core piece of what we've done. Kyrie's a tremendous player. He has made great contributions to this franchise. We enjoy him as a player, and we're going to keep sort of the stuff in-house in terms of what was said in those meetings. Continues to be a core piece of who we are and what we do. We've had dialogue with his representation. It's a fluid situation and something that we're just not going to address right now.
I believe we're going to be competing for championships for a long period of time. I really do, and especially, you know, this year coming up. I mean, we're not done yet. And I think, frankly, for a guy who wasn't even officially in the GM position, and we signed Derrick Rose, we're bringing over, you know, Jenny Osman from Turkey, and, you know, we've got Jeff Green, and we keep working every single day. There's all kinds of possibilities. One thing you learn is you don't control everything. If you're making a trade, you know, there's another team that has to agree to a trade. You know, you can't say we want to trade or we want to do this without the other team agreeing, so you do your best to try to make that happen. But I think Kobe will be particularly good at that when those opportunities come up.
I'm looking at this team right here, the Detroit Lions. Look how they ended the season. At Giants, loss. At Cowboys, loss. Home against the Packers, they needed that one, loss.
Peter's so ride or die. Right?
At Seahawks, loss.
Bad losses, too.
They fizzled out, right? Matt Stafford, contract year, okay? You have a healthy Amir Abdullah. Ooh. A healthy Theo Riddick. Ooh. You have a new offensive line because he spent money on Ricky Wagner, and you went out and made adjustments. And, oh, yeah, you have another year in Jim Bob Cooter's offensive system. They bring back just about everybody on that team, right? Yeah. DeAndre Levy was battling injuries the last few years. He's replaced by Jared Davis, who was their first-round pick. Ziggy Ansah wants a new deal. Ooh. Stafford wants a new deal. Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, Abdullah, Riddick. That NFC North is vulnerable.
But obviously very excited to start year number two. We're looking to improve as a football team, compete, come in and do whatever we think it takes to get this organization where it needs to be. I'm very excited about the roster and where we are, but we all still know there's still work to be done that way. And I know we'll continue to push that way, but I think our players coming off of OTAs and the way they competed, we're looking forward to the summer. I think we've had a great summer thus far, and I think our guys are glad to be back and glad to start this opportunity again. So I'm going to probably start this out just like we did in OTAs. Cody will walk out there first, and we'll give him an opportunity there. And obviously, Brock and Deshaun and Kevin, all those guys will get reps. I mean, this is a competition. Somebody has to walk out there first. We've made a decision. It will be Cody.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What does walking out there first mean? Taking the first snap on day one, on game one, not on day one. Today is day one of training camp, game one. That, of course, is what everybody is looking toward. Welcome to the Extravaganza Radio on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. If you can't figure it out, we are going to be football heavy today, particularly in hour number one as we give you a little training camp preview from both Cleveland and Detroit. Coming up at 3:35, our man Justin Rogers, who covers the Lions for the Detroit News, will be joining us. But right now, Cleveland Browns beat reporter and really great friend of the show over the last 3 years, Scott Petrak, joins us from Berea, I believe it would be, not from Cleveland, as the Browns get ready for day number one, camp number two for Hugh Jackson as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And Scott, so good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Bob. How you been?
I'm great, man. It's so exciting to get back to another season, and I know these are considered the dog days of July and August. It's a long, hot time out there. You guys have to spend in the sun covering those guys as they spend all of that time and energy in the sun. How you feeling about things getting started?
Good. You know, it's always exciting to have the new football season here. You know, not sure expectations are all that high outside of Berea, maybe even inside of Berea, but it's good. It's good to be back out here, and it can't be any worse than last year, right? So we should see some kind of improvement. Just not sure how much improvement.
Yeah, and that's of course, the question. It's about measuring improvement here. Hugh Jackson, in fact, let's start there. I was going to start with the quarterback decision that was just kind of touched on by Hugh, and then Miles Garrett, the number one pick, and all this other stuff. But you know what, Scott? Let's talk about that. Hugh Jackson was very, very vocal at the end of last season and through the offseason at, you know, the different points in time in which he did interviews, and he talked about the embarrassment of last season, and he swore that will not be repeated. He will not allow another year like that to go by with him as the head coach of this team. How personally is he taking the challenge of improving this team in the way that he describes?
Yeah, very, very personal, Bob. And that was one of the things that really stood out to me last year. And as the season dragged on, you could just see the losses wear on Hugh. And he had a hard time dealing with it. And he's a, you know, he's an optimistic guy. He's always full energy. And, you know, he tried to keep a stiff upper lip, and I thought he did for the most part. But at times you just see it dragging down, you know, and he said things like, this is never going to happen again. You'll never see this under me happen again. So I think he takes that as his personal responsibility. And obviously he needs help with the roster, and he needs more talent than he had last year. But if this season goes as poorly as last season did, you know, I don't know how Hugh would deal with it, but it wouldn't be well. And, you know, maybe it'd be the kind of thing where he's like, hey, I can't take this. I got to get out of here.
Yeah, and you know, he wouldn't be the first guy to kind of feel that way, even though they didn't quit. But guys who have been fired, you know, really weren't crying the blues after it happened, because they know what they were trying to do was just, you know, extraordinarily difficult to get done with the resources or lack of resources they've been given. So I like the fact that he is taking this very, very personally. And since we're talking about the coach first, and we'll get to the quarterback and some of those other guys later, let's talk about the new defensive coordinator. If there's anybody more exciting, I think, for this team than the number one pick, Miles Garrett, going into this camp, it's the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. We all know about his history. You know about his past. He's been one of the most well-respected coordinators, along with, of course, the, you know, the Bounty Gate situation that, you know, that he found himself a part of. But he just fires people up, and that's something that Rob Ryan tried to do with a lot of bombast in his time there. There have been some coordinators who, you know, maybe have, you know, that kind of fiery personality. But, boy, people are genuinely fired up for Greg Williams because of the results he has gotten. How big of a difference do you think he'll make for that defense?
Well, it's interesting. I was kind of trying to quantify that myself. You know, I just posted a Garrett story, and I said, you know, he's one of the more significant upgrades since the last time we saw this team, right? The number one pick in the draft. But I don't think you can say the most significant because of guys like Greg Williams, you know. You know, they signed free agents, but I think Greg Williams might be at the top of that list. And if this team's going to have any chance to win more games than people think they will, it's going to start with the defense playing markedly better. And Greg Williams gives it a chance. And so do some of the guys they got, right? Miles Garrett and Dezon Bryant's coming back, and they signed Jason McCourty, and they locked up Jamie Collins. But the effect that Williams has is going to be difficult to measure. We saw it in the offseason program, the OTAs and the minicamp, and the defense dominated. Now, maybe that's because the offense struggles and they don't know who's going to play quarterback, but a lot of it's because Greg Williams knows how to design a defense, knows how to call it, and knows how to motivate his players. And we've seen that throughout his career. And you talk to guys who play for him, even though, you know, from the outside, it seems like, man, this guy's got a personality that kind of could rub you the wrong way. People who play for him love it, and they stick by him, and, you know, they talk well about him. So I think he's going to have a big impact. And if you see this team surprise people, I think it starts with the change that he is able to affect on defense.
Who, Scott Petrak, who covers the Cleveland Browns out in Berea as training camp opens today, who is it that doesn't or that is rubbed the wrong way by Greg Williams? I hear almost universally positive things about it. In fact, you know, there's a piece you wrote a few days ago. He will be must watch and can't help but hear attraction. He's just one of those bombastic, loud personalities that, I don't know, and maybe it's just because it's the kind of football guy I am, I'm drawn to that, and I would imagine a ton of other guys too. He is just going to be one of those guys that gets you motivated. So what is it about him that would rub someone the wrong way or has?
I think how in your face he is, not that there aren't a ton of football coaches like that, but he takes it to a different level. I mean, he is nonstop screaming at you so for the whole practice, for the whole film session. And I think there's just guys that don't appreciate that.
Okay.
And then if you took the Bonnie Gate thing, you know, I'm sure there's guys who didn't appreciate the language that he chose to use and the fact that, you know, it blew up the same season the next year. But even Scott Fujita, who played with him during that Super Bowl season, he kind of excuses that. He says, you know, that's not who Greg is. And Greg, you know, he credits Greg for winning that Super Bowl down in New Orleans because he said the defense was like an afterthought until Greg arrived and he changed the way they felt about themselves, and that led to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you know what? He's probably right. It was all about Drew Brees and that offense. It wasn't about the defense until Greg Williams got there. So I agree with you. I think he might be the most important addition to that team, not just to the defense, but to that team.
Yeah.
Now, of course, he can't really make tackles, though. That's why we get to other guys like Myles Garrett, and you wrote about him today. First of all, talk about his health. Let's talk about the foot that he injured during the OTAs or whenever it was a short while ago. Is he 100%, and is that something that could be recurring? Is it something he's dealt with in the past? Basically, what's his health status?
Right. Well, you know, he had a high left ankle sprain at A&M last year, and it slowed him down. And you could tell on the tape he wasn't giving 100% effort all the time, you know, and people attributed it to the ankle injury. So then he has the left foot sprain. Mini camp, and you're okay, are they connected? You know, and it's tough to tell. You never know if a guy favors something because he's coming off an ankle injury. He says he's good to go. You know, I've watched him do some drills early in practice as I stand out here. I mean, it looks fine to me in the 4 minutes I've watched him, but he says he's good. Hugh Jackson said he's totally healthy. I'm sure they'll be careful with him. You know, we might not see him, you know, do all the reps and pads when they get in the pads on Saturday. But they're breathing a sigh of relief after what looked like a bad injury during minicamp, and they have huge expectations for him, as they should with the number one pick. You know, he said, yeah, I want to be rookie of the year. First, I got to win a starting job on this team, because in the offseason, he wasn't running with the ones. So he knows what he has to do, and he knows what he has to say, and the talent's all there. It's a matter of, can he stay healthy, and can he carry it to Sundays? And he should be able to, and that should result in big numbers. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think the guy should come in and have 10 sacks as a rookie, because we've seen other defensive ends do it before. Why can't he?
No question about it. And I'm pretty sure he's got the starter thing locked up, pick. But yeah, to advance to the level you're talking about, it is going to be a challenge. And, you know, you wrote about this too, and his desire to be the very best he can be as fast as he can be is what leads him to wanting to challenge Joe Thomas in practice, one of the game's best, a future Hall of Famer. And that's talk about that and how he basically says, I want to work against 73.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed since the moment I started to do any kind of research on Garrett before the draft, and then talking to him and talking to people who know him. And that was one of the first things he said after he got drafted. He couldn't wait to go against Joe Thomas. He thinks that's going to make his game so much better, and it should. Because Joe Thomas, you know, if Myles Garrett's only move is to run around the edge, Joe Thomas has seen that 8 million times and knows exactly how to deal with it, right? So if he stops him 4 times in a row, then Garrett's going to have to say, okay, how am I going to beat this guy? Is it a spin move? Is it a swim move? Whatever the defensive ends use. And there might not be anybody better in the league, and there might only be a handful of guys better through history to try to go against and perfect your craft. So I think it's fortuitous for Garrett to be in this situation, and he appreciates it. And I think that's one of, you know, he's been called an old soul, and I think that's accurate about Garrett. He appreciates who's around him and what he needs to do to get better, and I don't think there's a better example than he thinks he's going to need Joe Thomas to get him to where he needs to be.
When I was in college playing football a lifetime ago, I once leg pressed 860 pounds and felt pretty damn good.
Wow.
About it.
That's
my thing. I had way stronger legs than upper body. I was not, it wasn't correlative there. I felt pretty good about that until I read this in your story. Did he leg press 1,450 pounds?
That's what he said, Bob. And I think it's legit because I saw the video, and there has to be 20 or 10, at least 10 of the giant weights on each side. And then like a 200-pound or 150-pound guy on top of it. So, you know, I mean, I couldn't tell exactly how many things on there, but that seems legitimate to me. And he wasn't laughing, or that was his story. He said it was 1,450 pounds.
Wow. He said
coming off a foot train.
An old basketball teammate of his. So I'm thinking maybe if it's Manute Bol or somebody like that, it's only about 110. But that's an amazing story. There's no doubt he is a physically freakish type of athlete. Let's move over to the other side of the ball on day one of training camp. We're talking to Scott Petrak. We're doing a little bit of a training camp preview today. Coming up at 3:35, we're going to talk Lions with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News, who's out at that camp. So, Scott, on the other side of the ball, as obviously we played the little clip there at the beginning, Hugh Jackson said somebody's got to run out with the ones. It doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement that Cody Kessler is the starting quarterback whose job it is to lose going into this thing. It was more of a, well, we could be him, it could be Brock. It probably can't be Deshaun at this particular point in time, but it is Cody Kessler. What are you reading to that?
Yeah, I think you read it the right way, Bob. That, yeah, somebody's got to do it. Cody hasn't done anything to yank that status away from him, but he is so far from locking up the starting job for week one that it's going to have to play out. You know, Cody's the only guy that was here last year, you know, among the top three, so I think it's almost a seniority decision. To me, this quarterback competition is different than the ones we've seen pretty much every year out here in Berea. Because not only do you have three candidates instead of two, I believe it's wide open. A lot of times you come in here and the coach has already kind of made up his decision. All right, it's going to be Hoyer over Manziel. I just need to see it on the field. Or it's going to be Anderson over Quinn, whatever the, you know, the two combatants were.
Right.
This time, I don't think Hugh Jackson's mind has been made up. And I really feel all three guys could win the job.
Really? You think that the rookie, yes, Deshaun Kizer, actually has a chance to start for this team game one?
Well, Bob, I didn't feel that way right after they drafted him.
You think there's a chance, though, Scott?
Right. Yes, I do. And here's what changed for me. I didn't think that way right after the draft, and then you saw him in minicamp, and he started getting a lot of work with the first-team offense. And he started getting a lot of work with the first-team offense. And Hugh Jackson said, I need to see what this guy's got. And we know that the Browns will probably, we assume the Browns will have a high pick again next year. And there's going to be quarterbacks to take. They need to find out if this kid's ready. So, he'll play at some point this year. I think that's a fair assumption. Whether it's week one or week seven or week eight remains to be seen. But if he's close, if the coaching staff feels, you know what, this kid's pretty close to being ready week one, I think they go with him because of the three, to me, he's the one that has a chance to be the long-term answer. I don't think either of the other guys does.
Well, I think that's fair to say, even though they're all relatively young, particularly Kessler. I think you're right about that. But so you said he's, you know, Hugh Jackson wanted to see what he's got. He got a lot of work in those OTAs and minicamps. What did you see from him when you saw it? Or some of those were closed, were they not?
Yeah, but we saw all the minicamps, and we saw maybe four of the OTA sessions.
Okay, so you did
get
good. You did get good, I feel, then. So what's your, from all of you, not that you're a scout or GM, Scott, but you've been doing this for a long time, and you know what a good passer looks like, from even in minicamps, from a guy who doesn't have it. What do you see when you look at Deshaun Kizer then during that period of time?
Well, you see a mixed bag, Bob. You see a guy that's big and strong with a great arm that makes throws. You go, wow, that's a big-time throw. That's why they drafted him. And then you see the mistakes. You know, I remember he went to throw a swing pass and Jimmy Collins stepped in front of it and would have had a pick six. You know, he'll hang on to the ball too long. He'll misread the coverage. And those things are what you can't have if you're hoping to beat the Steelers on September 10th. But that doesn't mean you can't get rid of those mistakes or enough of them between now and September 10th to say, hey, let's give this guy a shot. The quarterback coach, and we talked to him, David Lee, said, here's the problem. He'll miss a blitz, which would get him killed in the game.
Right.
So until he can figure that out, we can't play him on Sunday. Now, that was in June. So he's got to figure that out. But if he figures out those basics and it goes along with the athleticism and the big arm and he's a smart kid, then all of a sudden you say, hey, you know, why are we delaying the inevitable? Let's play him.
The big arm, you can't coach. The physicals, you cannot do, but you can teach him to pick up the blitz. You can teach him
exactly.
To do these kinds of things. So those are really expected right now. I mean, if he comes in and has all that stuff down right now, then he's a prodigy. For being what he is, you feel as though that this is a guy who could play perhaps in the first half of the year?
I do, Bob. I just think the way the organization is set up, where it's not win now, but it's let's figure out exactly what we have, especially the most important position. Mm-hmm. The two guys he's going against, you know, in my mind, I've decided that Cody Kessler can't be the long-term answer. So let's assume Hugh Jackson's on the same page as I am, then it's okay. Well, why are we just playing this guy when we know he's a career backup? And Osweiler, they were never committed to Osweiler in the first place. So now if Kaiser's not ready, then that's fine. You take the best guy that gives you a chance to beat Pittsburgh. But if he looks close and you go, you know what, Kessler slash Osweiler is 4% better than Kaiser, let's get this kid some reps because we need to see as much of him as possible. And if he winds up being your long-term starter, the experience can only help.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Go to Osweiler, though, for a second. You said they were never committed to him in the first place, and you're right, but they did trade for him, and that means they did take on the contract. It's a ton of money. He's making a lot more than the other two guys there. So is he not going to get any shot? I mean, Hugh Jackson said it's wide. You even said it. It's wide open with a three-man thing. But
right.
You yourself have kind of eliminated Kessler as being the long-term guy, and thus why make him the short-term guy. You're high somewhat, it sounds like, on Kaiser. You're really not saying much about Osweiler. Does he not have a real chance here?
Well, here's what I think. There's so many moving pieces with him. I think he gives him the best chance to win week one just because of his experience. He's won 13 games in the league. And he's 6'8 with a big arm, and he moves pretty well, right? So I think he's athletically better than Kessler. Maybe not Kaiser, but he's athletically better than Kessler by a bunch. However, you know, the front office, when they drafted or when they traded for him, he was an afterthought. So I think he's won over some people inside the building since he's been here with the work ethic and the ability to pick up the offense. But you know how it is, Bob. If a front office drafts guys and, you know, you're kind of not one of their guys, it's an uphill climb. He's making $16 million, and he's going to make $16 million again next year, I think. So it's not like he's a cheap alternative. I just think there's some stuff working against Brock. And, you know, let's say somebody loses a quarterback in training camp or the preseason. Maybe somebody comes calling, hey, we'll take half of Brock's contract. I think the Browns would say, you know what, that makes sense for us over the long term. Let's get rid of him. So I just think there's a lot of moving pieces, Brock. Having said that, if it's super close, or let's say they don't think Kaiser's ready, then I could see them going to Osweiler over Kessler because, to me, it gives them a better chance to win.
I would agree. I would agree. He would. I mean, I don't care how bad he really was for Houston or even toward the end when Manning took back over as injured as he was and led that team to that championship. I think that experience alone, and he's got enough talent. It's not like he's, you know, he can't throw the ball from here to there. I think he would give them the best chance to win. So, and I really hope he gets that opportunity, not because I think he's a long-term guy, but I just feel like he deserves that much, especially since they went ahead and went out of their way to trade for him. Even though we know there were other things that they were considering for that reason. But, Scott, give me the names of a couple other guys. I know you got to jet and get back to watching practice. Give me the names of a couple of guys you're watching on day one, particularly if any of them are receivers, because whoever the guy is we're talking about here, QB, has got to find somebody to throw to. Terrell Pryor, their most experienced receiver from a year ago, is gone. Kenny Britt is in. You got a whole bunch of other young guys. What do you like?
Yeah, you know what? Keep an eye on Ricardo Lewis. He's one of those second-year receivers. To me, he was the one that stood out during the offseason program. Physical, fast, has the tools. His hands are a little sketchy, but I think he'll make a big jump. And then Seth DeValve, a second-year tight end out of Princeton. He looked really good in the offseason. He was banged up last year. I think he's got a chance to really step into those shoes that Gary Barnage left.
What about the rookie tight end?
Yeah, I like him. He's raw. He's only 21, didn't play a ton at Miami. But 3 years from now, could be one of the better guys in the league.
Physical specimen, right? I mean, he's just
yes,
a super,
no doubt
super
about it.
Athlete. Yeah, great stuff.
He high jumps 7'1".
Holy cow. Yeah, like yeah. I said, physical specimen. Scott Petrak,
yep.
I know you got to get back to work, my friend. Go watch those guys practice. Thank you for your opening camp analysis, and we'll check in with you again whenever your schedule allows.
Okay.
Sounds good, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott.
Scott Petrak joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, with a little training camp preview out of Berea, Ohio, Northeast Ohio, just a stone's throw away from Cleveland. That's where the Browns are practicing. Guess what? We're going to the NFC side, to the D side, coming up right after the bottom of the hour, Sports Center, and we're going to talk to Justin Rogers, who is at Lions camp, going to give us the lowdown as they open things up as well. But before we do all of that, It's time for our stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Indeed, in our Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day, a look at former Tiger J.D. Martinez, who of course was traded a week or so ago to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and guess what? He's doing his power thing in Arizona. He had two home runs yesterday and a blowout win for the D-backs. Since being traded to Zona, J.D. in five games is 4-for-16 overall. Not a huge number of hits, but three of those four hits have left the yard. Three home runs, seven RBIs in five games played right now. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We got a lot of stuff still to do. We're going to talk to Justin Rogers of the Detroit News. I almost said the wrong paper. The Detroit News, who is out there working hard for the news covering the Detroit Lions. So we'll go to the Lions beat with Justin coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed rolling onward at 3:39. Thanks for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. We'll open up phone lines in a bit at 866-240-1065. But we want to stay in our training camp preview theme this hour. Thanks to our friend Scott Petrak out in Cleveland for talking to us about the Browns as they are actually at practice right now. And joining us now from Detroit is our good friend Justin Rogers, who covers the Lions for the Detroit News. And the Lions, of course, report on Sunday, if I have that correct, as guys are, well, they may be reporting now, but their first practice is scheduled on Sunday. So for a little bit of a preview of the Lions camp, Mr. Rogers, thanks so much for being with us. How are you, Justin?
It's been a while, Bob.
Yeah, it really has, and it's really good. I told my friend Scott from Cleveland the same thing. It's just good to hear your voice and his voice again because that means it's football season again. I asked him how he spent his, you know, not that you have downtime. You still work during the off season, but you know what it's like to be back. So I'll ask you the same thing. Are you excited when camp, you know, gets geared back up again and you kind of get back into the flow of being on the beat?
No, I love my vacation. You know, the NFL beat writer's true vacation is that mid-June to late August. So I used those 5 weeks well, popped over to Barcelona for a few weeks, and I don't know, I still got to slowly come out of vacation mindset, no doubt.
Understood, and I'm sure the guys feel the same way, the players feel the same way. But for the fans, it's always fun to get these guys back in and get camp going, and, of course, to read and listen to great analysis from people like you who are going to be on the scene. So, Justin, let's just kind of start with your overall impression of this roster. It is a very stacked one right now in terms of numbers, obviously, with the undrafted free agents who were signed. Of course, the draft picks led by Jared Davis, Tabor, Kenny Golladay, Michael Roberts from Toledo, which we're excited about to see what he looks like in Detroit. As you look at what they brought back and what they have coming in, overall impressions of the roster going into camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think they plugged some of their biggest holes. They upgraded one of their biggest areas of weakness in their offensive line. They spent a great deal of resources on that the last two off seasons, culminating with TJ Lang and Rick Wagner's signings this off season. They plugged that linebacker deficiency with Davis, which yep. was a huge need. But you know, there's still holes in this roster. You know, the pass rush I think is still a big concern. Losing Taylor Decker unexpectedly in OTAs is an issue, and you know they're going to be starting from scratch there to find his replacement once training camp gets underway. So, you know, there's been some answers this offseason, but as it works in sports, you know, there are some new questions that they've got to come up with the answers to as well.
Yeah, well, there always is, and one of them is weapons. I was reading an ESPN.com piece earlier today in which they run down the teams that have the best weapons in terms of skill player positions, the most threatening guy, kind of guys. And sad to say, but the Lions are not very high on that list. And they're looking for a go-to guy. They're looking for a guy that is a home run type of a threat on a regular basis. And I don't know the way you find that. Is it something that can develop? If you don't have just one of those guys that jumps off the page at you with eye-popping statistics and big names?
Yeah, no, I think they're going about it a different way that is one that can work. You know, they've got a lot of B-tier weapons, is I guess the way I'd label it.
Okay.
You know, guys that aren't Pro Bowl caliber players, but, you know, are, I think, certainly considered above average options at their positions. And when you have above average options at all the skill positions, you know, you can have a pretty darn good offense, as you saw with the way Stafford was producing last year. And that was missing Ameer Abdullah and Theo Riddick for much of that second half of the year. So you take that, you take Ameer Abdullah, who I think is a pretty good football player. He's not a guy that's going to give you 25 carries, but, you know, could give you 20 touches a game. You combine in Theo Riddick, who's maybe one of the best receiving backs, probably is one of the best receiving backs in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And guys like Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, Eric Ebron, all guys that can catch 60, 70, 80 balls, depending on how that's distributed. And you introduce Kenny Galladay, a big-bodied receiver rookie, into that mix. And you just have a lot of different ways to go with it. You can be a potent offense given health across the board.
I think that's pretty well said when you call them kind of tier two weapons. And by the way, for the record, just, you know, the piece that I was talking about, they broke them down into tiers, and they come in at tier four, in the way that ESPN did this, 22nd overall, according to their analysis. All the names you just mentioned were there except for Galladay, but, you know, Golden Tate, maybe the most reliable. Marvin Jones had that blazing start last season. Then after the first three games, which you probably know, he averaged 40.1 yards receiving per game. And then Eric Ebron with the highest drop rate in the league, highest was featured here as well. You mentioned Abdullah and Riddick. So there's not one superstar. They don't have the Antonio Brown or the Le'Veon Bell that the Steelers do. They don't have that kind of guy, but they have maybe security in numbers, I guess. You don't know which guy is going to step up and be the big threat on a given day.
Yeah, and you've got a quarterback that's proven to work well in this system of spreading it around. A lot of short passes, a lot of guys that can do damage after the catch in Tate, Riddick, Abdullah, even Ebron in certain matchup situations. So you get a quarterback that's accurate, that's completing approximately 65% of his passes the last year and a half under the current offensive coordinator, and that's an offense that can work. And again, you need a running game. You know, that's something the Lions have absolutely lacked, you know, pretty much as long as I can remember. And you didn't do much to upgrade that from the running back position this year. Now, you upgraded the offensive line. You brought in a nice blocking tight end in Darren Fells. Mm-hmm. So you hope that Abdullah can stay healthy. You hope that he can give you that 4 to 4.2 yards per carry to be efficient enough to keep defenses honest and allow you to utilize all those weapons in the passing game.
We're talking to Justin Rogers about the Lions as they are just a couple of days away from reporting to training camp and starting camp. First practices on Sunday. Our man Jim Cushlin is on the scene with us as well. Jim's got a question. Go ahead, Jim.
And especially when we're talking that running game or even the passing game, doesn't matter. You need, obviously, the offensive line. I think there's obviously some improvements there. But then, as you mentioned, and we're all very familiar with the Taylor Decker injury from OTA, as we're about to start camp here, formal training camp here in a couple of days, first practice coming up on Sunday, based on what you're seeing and hearing, who right now has the inside track for that spot?
So that's interesting, because at the end of mandatory minicamp, it was being split between a guy named Cornelius Lucas, a former undrafted free agent who's been here for approximately 4 years now, has some playing time under his belt, but has never been quite effective, particularly at that left side. And they moved guard Joe Dahl over to left tackle, and they clearly didn't like what they were seeing from that combination. So they went out and added two players the last day of mandatory minicamp who have not taken the field for the Lions yet. And that's Cyrus Kwanjo, a former second-round pick, former All-American for Alabama, that, you know, had a nice little stretch in his last year in Buffalo last year. And then went out and got Greg Robinson, former number two overall pick, a guy out of Auburn who was absolutely dominant at the college level and has largely been a bust at the professional level with St. Louis / Los Angeles Rams. Jeff Schwartz, who was with the Lions for a cup of coffee last year, but, you know, a guy you can lean as a former player with experience, not just in the league, but in the Lions system, you know, wrote a pretty compelling piece for, I wish I could tell you what the publication was. It's escaping me right now, but, basically stating why Robinson, he felt, would be primed to thrive in Detroit's blocking scheme. And so Robinson has $3.2 million guaranteed on his deal last year. I don't think Bob Quinn pulls the trigger without believing what Schwartz was expressing there and the fact that Robinson fits the scheme and he can succeed. And so, you know, going to training camp, even though I have not seen him in a Lions uniform yet, I think that's probably going to be the front runner for the job is Greg Robinson.
Justin Rogers joining us, talking a little bit about the Detroit Lions as veterans report here at the end of the week. They start practicing on Sunday. You know, we've only mentioned Matt Stafford in passing thus far. A couple of days ago, his name was a little bit more prominent because there was talk that he might end up being the NFL's first $30 million man, a $30 million a season man, perhaps eclipsing Derek Carr's record contract that he signed with the Raiders. What do you think of the contract and negotiations thus far? Is it something you think they'd be willing to go to give him $60 million over 2 years? How soon do you think this will get done?
It's a great question. You know, and it's been a very quiet negotiation, and that's largely because Stafford's agent, Tom Condon, likes to do things that way. He doesn't negotiate in public. He doesn't typically lean on the media until the very end stages when things are at the finish line, and that's when that news will actually leak. But, you know, the $30 million figure did catch me a little off guard at first just because Carr set the benchmark just recently at $25 million. I feel like Stafford's probably going to come in closer to that than the 30, but he is going to end up being the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, assuming he does sign the long-term deal. The Lions really control his rights for two more years. He's under contract for this season. They can easily get away with franchising him the following year, very similar to what the Washington team is doing with Kirk Cousins, but they'd prefer to get a long-term deal done. I've always believed it would get done. You know, whether they announce that on Saturday when the veterans report or, you know, it lingers into training camp, you know, I know General Manager Bob Quinn is not opposed to negotiating into the season. He got two long-term deals done with Theo Riddick and Sam Martin, punter Sam Martin, during the season last year. Darius Slay, he got a long-term deal done the eve of training camp. They announced it just a few hours after the players reported. So I still expect the Stafford deal gets done this offseason. I don't think it's going to be a 2 or 3 year deal. I think it's probably going to be 4 or 5. And, you know, you're looking in the ballpark of probably $26, $27 million a year.
If he signs the richest contract in NFL history, which it would be, is there more pressure on him? Not that it, you know, is all on him, obviously. It's football. This isn't basketball where a guy gets that deal and you doggone well better make the playoffs. But it is the quarterback. He is the man who would have the richest contract in the league. Is there pressure on him to break this string of seasons without a playoff victory, not just making it, but getting a victory in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, the pressure is going to come for perception. You know, we all know that quarterbacks inherently take on more of the blame and more of the praise when things are going right or wrong. That's just the way it works. They touch the ball the most. They have the biggest impact in the game. But, you know, you look at maybe Stafford's best season was he threw 41 touchdowns, 16 picks, and the defense wasn't very good. You know, do you blame the quarterback for that? He went out and he played really well in that playoff game against New Orleans that year, and the defense just couldn't stop Drew Brees. Then the year the defense was really good, Caldwell reeled Stafford in and wouldn't let him throw downfield, and they didn't take any chances, and they coughed up a lead in Dallas. But, you know, end of the day, the perception's always going to be attached to him. People are always going to talk about the success he had as a teammate, not just as a quarterback. His individual statistics may set all kinds of records. You know, he's probably going to be in the all-time record book with some of the numbers he's put up through his early career and the fact that he's still young and wants to play a long time. But if he doesn't start winning playoff games, you know, whether it's his fault or not, you know, he's always going to be judged by those standards. I don't think he's going to put more pressure on himself. I don't think the coaching staff is going to put more pressure on him. But, you know, eventually there's going to be well, there's already a segment of the fan base, but it'll continue to grow louder and louder. People will become frustrated with him, and they'll attach it to the dollar sign when the team's success isn't there.
Yeah, there's no doubt they will. I mean, you're right about the quarterback position is already going to, you know, come with a lot of pressure to win and to win a playoff game. But with that dollar sign or those dollar signs and more zeros at the end of his paychecks, it certainly adds to that. Real quick on the Patriots story. I read this, of course, online at Detroit News Online, and they're going to practice one time before their preseason game with the Patriots. Is this a marriage of, you know, the Bob Quinn relationship with New England? How did that whole thing come about that they agreed to practice together?
Yeah, unfortunately, it fizzled out from what it initially seemed to be, which was a couple joint practices together with the team. It's now just a joint walkthrough, which is obviously a much lighter practice.
Also,
contact.
They're not actually going to bang with the world champions.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm curious to get Caldwell and potentially Quinn's take on the value of a joint walkthrough before the third preseason game, which, as we all know, is the trial for the, you know, the regular season, the dry run.
Yeah.
So, you know, the walkthrough, I just don't know the value, but the Patriots do quite a bit of it. I mean, I think they have joint practices with two or three other teams this offseason. The Lions have been doing a little bit more of it. They had two with Pittsburgh last year. They got two with the Colts this year. I think there's great value in just seeing different bodies across from you as you're working on your fundamentals. I thought they would have really benefited from two practices against the world champs, but, you know, alas, that's not what we're looking at. And I can't really tell you what the value is, but it is something that stems from one, the philosophy Quinn learned in New England and, you know, the fact that they're having this joint session is, you know, extension of that relationship.
Yeah, I can certainly see. I agree with you. I don't know what kind of a value is for the walkthrough either. If you're going to practice against the best in the world, or, you know, the world champions, I guess, and probably the Vegas pretty heavy favorites, I think, to repeat again, I think there's probably much more to that. Jim Cushman, go ahead. You got another one?
You know, and one last question for you, Justin, and I'm loving reading this story. And, you know, Bob and I are Browns fans, and one thing I know, Bob, and I know this is true of you too, I've always appreciated is seeing Jim Brown walking around the field during games, things like that. Well, now in a formal capacity, I'm reading, I believe it's they're calling him the brand ambassador. So the first time in two decades, Barry Sanders is going to be getting a paycheck from the Lions. He'll be hanging around the team and the games and everything. Brand ambassador, they call him. I'm loving this story, Justin.
I think I might have given him the brand ambassador title and confirmed that was an appropriate description with both Rod Wood and Barry's agent. And they did. They agreed. So, you know, that is, I think, you know, what we're going with and I think what other people are running with. But, yeah, Barry's relationship with the Lions has been, I think, on solid ground for a long time. You know, there was the initial shock after his retirement. But even after that, you know, the Lions were always in communication with him, whether it was trying to bring him back to the field. And then after that, trying to bring him back into the fold. And he's made appearances at games, at charity events in a, you know, a lesser capacity for, you know, much of the last decade, if not a little bit beyond that. And so this is a more formal, marriage, reunion, if you will. And he's going to be doing quite a bit of appearances. They've got an itinerary lined up for him. He's going to be, you know, showing up at a lot of the community and fan events. He'll be traveling a few games a year with the team. So, you know, I don't think people can ever get enough of Barry Sanders. Not only was he one of the most entertaining athletes we've ever seen in any sport, but, you know, a genuinely good person, humble person that, you know, just enhances your image of your organization.
To this day, still my favorite running back to watch and one of my top three all-time running backs to this very day. And the only reason I say that, well, I shouldn't say the only reason, there's a very good reason for that. I never saw Gale Sayers. His career was too short and I was too young. But that's the one that I hear more older guys comparing him to. I wish you could have seen Gale run. But of all of the guys that I have seen run, Barry Sanders remains to this day my favorite guy to watch. So I love that story, too.
There was just nothing like him.
No.
I mean, there really wasn't. I mean, the way he moved and changed directions, and he lost it. I mean, he's the NFL leader in lost yardage, which is a funny stat, but he was durable. He had thighs like Mack trucks, and you just couldn't bring the guy down. It was just so fun to watch. He did things you saw in high school recruit tapes you see now where the guys just seem like they're so far above the level of competition, and he seems so far above the level of competition from NFL linebackers and defensive linemen. It was amazing.
It was something that, you know, it's not just the physical, that, you know, the thighs you talk about and all that, but there's just an innate escapability. I see a crack over there that's going to develop once this guy moves and that guy goes that way and he finds it. You know, it's kind of like seeing two or three moves ahead. You know, Wayne Gretzky was often talked about that way on the ice. He saw three passes ahead before everybody else. That's how Barry was. He knew where a crack was going to be, and then he could find a way to spin to it, dip under it, jump over it, or whatever to get there. And it was just something, you know, it was artistry. That's the best way to say it. He was an artist. And his media.
Yeah, we've been blessed.
I'm sorry?
We've been blessed. We've been blessed to see some great athletes in our life. I mean, no question. I mean, yeah. Whether it's the LeBrons or the Jordans or the Barrys or the Gretzkys, and we've just seen these transcendent athletes that have just done things that just can't be replicated.
By the way, I'll still never forgive him for quitting when he did. Now that God bless him, and he knew what he wanted, and he did it. But I you know, it's selfish. I wanted to see him do that more, and I wanted to see him break the all-time rushing record. I didn't want it to be Emmitt Smith because I knew Barry was better. If Barry had played behind that line, my God, forget about the lost yardage thing you talked about, Justin. He would have run for 25,000 yards behind that Cowboys offensive line. There's not.
So they say.
What's that?
I said, so they say.
Yeah, I mean that's what I would have loved to have seen. Anyway, since we're talking about former Lions and you know the new role, if you will, they're trying to reach out and extend an olive branch, if you will, of some sort to Megatron. Is this going to happen? Is Calvin Johnson amenable to coming back and kind of saying, hey, you know, I love you, you know, to the Lions and their fans, or is he still going to kind of be standoffish?
You know, I haven't heard any update on that, but you know, I think it would be unusual or surprising if he did accept that offer this year. You know, I think it's a relationship that will eventually be repaired, but mm-hmm. you know, it Barry's agent put it a really interesting way when I was asking him to compare the two, since the careers ran so parallel and yeah. the frustrations and the earlier time, and it's uncanny. But he goes, listen, he goes, Barry went in the playoffs 5 times in 10 years. He didn't endure half of what Calvin Johnson endured, including 0-16 season. He goes, I'm not speaking for Barry. He goes, I just couldn't imagine it. And I get that. You know, Calvin's career record, I guess, with the Lions was, you know, abysmal and tough. And the success he had was, you know, it just was never there. It never matched what he was doing individually. The team couldn't keep up, couldn't put the right guys around him. So, you know, it's been very interesting to me to hear him air his frustrations. It's out of character. You know, Calvin would never have done that as a player, and I'm kind of surprised that he's airing it now, but you know, just shows you the built up, pent up frustrations that he has if it's reached a level where he's willing to speak on it. But you know, I think the organization doesn't want this. You know, they're going to continue to reach out over the years, and I think, you know, eventually time will heal this wound.
I hope that's the case. And you make a very good point, by the way. He did endure things that really nobody else ever had, including the frustrations that Barry felt with not going further than they were able to. Justin Rogers on the Alliance beat, enjoying the last couple of days of, quote, vacation, if you will, before the practices start on Sunday. Justin, thanks very much for your insight and your preview of the training camp. We always appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again.
I'm sure we'll be speaking plenty during the season.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it. Justin Rogers joining us. And you know what you can do? You can join the racers and the fans at Michigan International Speedway. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket has a chance for you to attend the races up at MIS the weekend of August 11th. Up for grabs, tickets to qualifying on Friday. The NASCAR Camping World Truck Series on Saturday, tickets to the Pure Michigan 400 on Sunday, and to qualify for this tremendous opportunity, just text MIS ticket, MIS for Michigan International Speedway ticket, all one word, MIS ticket to 64636. Good luck from Michigan International Speedway and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hour number two of the extravaganza coming up.
As it's been widely reported, I sat down with Kyrie Irving and his agent a few weeks back. I don't know the exact date. We try to do this every summer, whether their contract's coming up or not. And there was several scenarios discussed at that time. I don't feel it's appropriate really get into the details of all those scenarios. And so, again, I don't know the sources of the report that there was a trade request made. I read it in the media, like some of you reported and some of you read. You know, we talked about a wide range of possibilities in the future. At that time, we had not signed Kobe yet as our general manager, and there are a few other moves I believe that have been made that weren't made at that time. So, you know, these things are fluid. We think that Kyrie Irving is, you know, one of the best guards in the NBA. You know, he's part of a championship, 3 years straight to the finals. We value his talent.
He's a core piece of what we've done. Kyrie is a tremendous player. He has made great contributions to this franchise. We enjoy him as a player, and we're going to keep sort of the stuff in-house in terms of what was said in those meetings. Continues to be a core piece of who we are and what we do. We've had dialogue with his representation. It's a fluid situation and something that we're just not going to address right now.
I believe we're going to be competing for championships for a long period of time. I really do, and especially, you know, this year coming up. I mean, we're not done yet. And I think, frankly, for a guy who wasn't even officially in the GM position, and we signed Derrick Rose, we're bringing over, you know, Jenny Osman from Turkey, and, you know, we've got Jeff Green, and we keep working every single day. There's all kinds of possibilities. One thing you learn is you don't control everything. If you're making a trade, you know, there's another team that has to agree to a trade. You know, you can't say we want to trade or we want to do this without the other team agreeing, so you do your best to try to make that happen. But I think Kobe will be particularly good at that when those opportunities come up.
So I'm looking at this team right here, the Detroit Lions. Look how they ended the season. At Giants, loss. At Cowboys, loss. Home against the Packers, they needed that one, loss.
Peter's so ride or die. Right?
At Seahawks, loss.
Bad losses, too.
They fizzled out, right? Matt Stafford, contract year, okay? You have a healthy Amir Abdullah. You have a healthy Theo Riddick. Ooh. You have a new offensive line because you spent money on Ricky Wagner and you went out and made adjustments. And, oh, yeah, you have another year in Jim Bob Cooter's offensive system. They bring back just about everybody on that team, right? Yeah. DeAndre Levy was battling injuries the last few years. He's replaced by Jared Davis, who was their first-round pick. Ziggy Ansah wants a new deal. Stafford wants a new deal. Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, Abdullah, Riddick. That NFC North is vulnerable.
But obviously very excited to start year number two. We're looking to improve as a football team, compete, come in and do whatever we think it takes to get this organization where it needs to be. I'm very excited about the roster and where we are, but we all still know there's still work to be done that way. And I know we'll continue to push that way, but I think our players coming off of OTAs and the way they competed, we're looking forward to the summer. I think we've had a great summer thus far, and I think our guys are glad to be back and glad to start this opportunity again. So I'm going to probably start this out just like we did in OTAs. Cody will walk out there first, and we'll give him the opportunity there. And obviously, Brock and Deshaun and Kevin, all those guys will get reps. I mean, this is a competition. Somebody has to walk out there first. We've made a decision. It will be Cody.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Boy, easily the most ringing endorsement I've ever heard a coach give a quarterback. Well, obviously somebody's got to walk out there first. It might as well be Cody. Paraphrasing a little bit there, but that's kind of what I heard. Not a whole lot of enthusiasm there by Hugh Jackson. Good montage there, stuffed. Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman from the press conference yesterday. Didn't say a whole lot, just confirming what we knew, that there is a trade scenario.
Although for what it's worth, Bob, yeah. Listening back to especially the beginning of that presser when they started answering questions, the phrase or some semblance of the phrase "situation is fluid," I counted four separate times came up.
Really?
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, that is interesting, and it is fluid, obviously, and then clearly, well, maybe not clearly. I didn't hear anything that would indicate, no, we're all on the same page here. That story was totally overblown. No, he's looking forward to training camp. Obviously we talk about our future. That's how they started this. We all always get together and talk about the future. But, no, it's fluid because that means we are open for business. We are going to have to trade him, and we'll wait and see exactly what kind of offers we get. But other than that, they didn't say much except for the Indiana Pacers did not get enough for Paul George, and that means – that was code for don't even try to undersell us if you want to trade for Kobe Altman for Kyrie. Don't even try it. You're not gonna get us to take a sucker deal the way the Pacers kind of did, even though they didn't have a ton of leverage because Paul George only had 1 year left.
Right.
Kyrie has 2 years plus a club player option for the third one, so he is certainly much, much more valuable. Didn't even try to give us a sucker deal. The Pacers could have done better, and we intend to do better if we move Kyrie Irving. So that's what I heard from the presser yesterday. Then you heard a little bit from Kyle Brandt of NFL Network on the Lions, and then Hugh Jackson on the Browns. We just talked to Justin Rogers of the Detroit News about the Lions, and we talked to Scott Petrak out of Cleveland covering the Browns. So
can you believe we're already here, Bob?
I know, really. I mean, it's kind of weird. We were just talking about 28-3. Oh, my God, 28-3. How did the Patriots come back from down 28-3 to beat the Falcons? No, how did the Falcons blow a 28-3 lead in the middle of the third quarter and lose the Super Bowl to the Patriots? It seems like it was just yesterday, and bang, hey, training camps are here. And teams are reporting and looking to the first preseason game. So, yeah, it is crazy how fast it came.
Yeah, and speaking of preseason games, incidentally, the first of those preseason games, believe it or not, 1 week from today, the Hall of Fame game in Canton, which courtesy of our friends at Westwood One will, by the way, have for you here on the ticket. That's Arizona-Dallas in that one. That's 1 week from today. Unreal.
Yeah, that really is. That is kind of crazy when you think about how fast that comes. And I don't like that. You know, I mean, I don't like if my team is in the Hall of Fame game because they're just not ready. First of all, it's five then. It's not one of four. You have to play five. Second of all, which I don't like, second of all, it's so early, it's pointless almost. You know, all you can possibly do is have something bad happen, not something good happen.
Yep.
Even if you're not playing your starters, which they won't, it's just one of those things. But it's traditional, and it's fun, and it's a big part of the...
And it's right on our doorstep.
Official start of the season, exactly right. So, you know, it is what it is. Hey, I want to get off the beaten path here for a second on the extravaganza and talking about sports and talk about... what happened at the fair yesterday? The Ohio State Fair, that is, of course.
Oh, yeah. I read about that.
Oh, my God.
Nasty business.
Did you see the video?
Yes. Oh, man. That's going to be in my head for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's for those who haven't seen it yet, it's I tweeted it. It's on YouTube. It's pretty much anywhere if you want to see. It's not graphic. Because I wouldn't send you to and I wouldn't retweet a graphic video of, like, somebody's death, you know, where it's, you know, you see somebody... you know, suffering in a terrible way or whatever. It's not graphic, but it is shocking. And what I mean is because you see the ride swinging back and forth as it does, and then you see it break apart in midair on one of its swings, one of its passes, and you see a row of seats fall to the ground and then a single seat beside that falling to the ground before it cuts off. So you don't, and it's far enough away that, I mean, you can still see it, but it's not close enough to see the, you know, the terrible result, which is, of course, the death of an 18-year-old who was on his way to the Marines, by the way. Absolutely tragic injury to seven others. I don't do that to make this a come-down moment, by the way. And for those who haven't seen it, I can't do it justice on the radio, but I'll try. If anybody goes to Cedar Point on a semi-regular basis, Kush, I know you've got a young one, so maybe you're not there yet, but maybe you remember.
We will be, though.
What's that?
We will be eventually, though.
Yeah, you will. Are you a regular Cedar Point aficionado out in Sandusky or no?
I haven't been in many years, but really? I have a feeling when she's tall and old enough, she's going to want to go on the coaster, so Daddy's going to have to go on with her.
So you're not a coaster enthusiast yourself.
I've been on them. I'm not a super enthusiast. I do love the ones at Cedar Point, but it's been a while.
I hate them, all of the ones at Cedar Point. I just can't stand them because I've got a height thing. I got a fear of heights thing. I didn't when I was younger. I went on all those things, and I was probably scared, more scared than I wanted to
admit.
Oh, I do
too, Bob. I have in the past freaked out on a Ferris wheel when it stops at the top. But I can go on the Raptor and the Magnum and all the rest of them because I'm going so fast I don't even notice how high off the ground I am anymore.
Oh, not me. Between heights and motion sickness, which I get, like, if I'm out on a boat.
Okay.
Those two things. Just, and
yeah,
like,
that'll
when I was
ruin
younger,
it for
I
you.
Had a problem. I dealt with it okay. I was probably more scared, though, than I wanted to admit in some of those, just because you're young and you want to be cool and you don't want to be the wuss of the group or whatever. But in my older age, I'm not afraid to say that I'm afraid. Yeah, I don't like those. They scare me. Anyway, if you've been to Cedar Point, the reason I asked that question, I believe it's called Max Air. And what it is, it's a giant pendulum, if you know what a pendulum is. And it just swings back and forth extraordinarily high. And what it is, at the bottom of the pendulum, is a giant circle, a massive 360-degree, well, obviously it's a circle, it's 360 degrees, seats all the way around the circle. Well,
okay.
The seats spin, not the seats themselves, the circle spins on this ride, and then the pendulum starts, and it goes back and forth to the point where at the top, of each pass, you're almost upside down, at least the ones at the bottom of the circle, which changes each time because they're spinning, you are upside down. And it is, to me, I watch it from the ground, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting sick just watching these people. You guys are idiots. What are you doing? Looks way too dangerous. Well, that's what this ride was like on a smaller scale, but still large enough at the Ohio State Fair. It was like the Max Air ride, which I believe is what it's called at Cedar Point. Somebody can call me and correct me if you want. 866-240-1065. Well, the ride at the fair yesterday, as the Ohio State Fair opened, was called Fireball. And it was just exactly like that, but like I said, a little bit of a scaled-down version. And that's what broke apart. And I asked people on my Facebook page today, Kush, how safe do you feel getting on or putting your kids on fair slash carnival slash festival rides that are like the versions of the Cedar Point rides, but that aren't up and anchored and fused where they're supposed to be and inspected on a regular basis, but instead are taken apart, yep, thrown in some trucks, driven to the next town, and put back together on the gravel, on the grass, on the parking lot, on the sand, on the dirt, wherever it is that they set up this day's or mm-hmm. this week's festival. And to be quite, you know, without being really insensitive or rude here, trying not to be anyway, the folks that travel with these festival slash carnival rides that assemble and then disassemble the rides, they're oftentimes called carnies. And again, without wanting to be mean or rude, and I don't, people are working for a living, no matter what kind of work it is, they have my respect. But they don't look like physicists. They don't look like people who have an understanding of metal fatigue. They don't look like they would know when a ride is fully ready to go and when this pulley is in danger of snapping. This piece of metal looks weak. It could crack and cause this whole thing to fall apart. They don't look like scientists, physicists, engineers, or even, quite frankly, even general contractors who build stuff. I've thought about it a lot. In more, again, it's kind of the same reason I stopped riding a lot of the big rides at Cedar Point. As you get older, you get a little more concerned about these kinds of things. And we took our kids to a few of those types of days, and, you know, they have them in virtually every town and city, all called different things. Some, you know, there's corn festivals, and there's duct tape festivals, and there's apple festivals, and there's mm-hmm. watermelon festivals. Out in Milan, Ohio, there's that. In Norwalk, where I used to live, Jim, there's the, what on earth was it called? Strawberry
yeah,
Festival.
There's one in Holland. Of course, the Lucas County Fair was just about a week and a half ago
of
now.
Of course, the county fairs, yep, all of them. Yep. I used to take my kids when they were younger to those things, and we'd let them ride some of those, but not anything that looked like it was going to leave the ground too much.
Right.
You know, the circular spinning ones that are on the ground, I guess. But you get scared because if this thing could just be taken apart and put on trucks and then reassembled someplace else, how do I know that that bolt got tightened enough? How do I know that that chain was put on the right link, you know, the notch to hold mm-hmm. it in place? How do I, you know what I mean?
Yes. It's just, oh, yeah.
How do I know that cable, that hose, is, you know, has the integrity to last and isn't going to give and snap at the wrong time? I don't know. I just, that death yesterday just really kind of got to me and a lot of other people, and a lot of people are agreeing with me, Jim. They won't put their kids on any of those things, and they won't go on them themselves for just that reason.
Yeah, and when I'm thinking about this, especially in the context that you're saying that you're talking about right now, the two things that pop into my head, one, at least my daughter, who's about to turn 6 and go to kindergarten and all that good stuff, at least, you know, any ride she'd be able to go on, they're much smaller. They're nothing like the one in the video, and I'm okay with it. Although
you start out like that, but then in a year, Jim, mm-hmm. and then 2 years and 3 years, she's going to be like, no, I want to go on that one, Daddy.
Right. And now I'm going to have to cross that bridge when I come to it. The other thing that pops into my head is, the only thing unfair in what you're saying is, I can't compare, like, this incident or, you know, your local church fair or the county fair or something like that. I can't compare those to Cedar Point. There's definitely a different ball game in that. I feel a lot safer pretty much anything inside the gates of Cedar Point.
Well, yeah,
that was
the point that I'm making.
Okay.
Those things aren't taken apart on a regular basis. Those things aren't taken down and driven to another city and then reassembled who knows how half-assed. Those are permanent fixtures,
right,
and they have the highest safety ratings, et cetera, because they have each and every ride is inspected every day before opening by engineers and experts in the field. Like I said, you know, I said in the carnivals and in the festivals that go to a county fair, et cetera, they don't look like physicists. Well, literally, they have engineers and physicists who have built these things, and they know exactly what to look for to make sure that when you are being catapulted, you know, 420 feet into the air on the top thrill dragster, for example.
Going, what, 80 miles an hour, whatever the heck it is?
120.
Oh, it's 120? Yeah. I'm thinking of a different ride then.
Well, then there's the Millennium, which I think is the... everybody's favorite. I know it's my kid's favorite roller coaster, which is
That was mine, and that was the one that's 80. I think the old Magnum
90,
was,
I think,
or 90. Yeah, yeah, the old Magnum was like 75,
310 feet high or something,
yep,
like that.
That's the one.
Yeah. So anyway, those things you do feel better about because there are physicists working on those and designing those. You know, the physicists and engineers who design them and then inspect them, etc. So it's a little bit of a different thing. But
yeah,
I'm just kind of curious how many people. How many people, not only before what happened yesterday, but certainly afterwards, you're going to get in those lines again? And I don't know if they're going to reopen the rides at the state fair or not.
Yeah, I haven't heard one way or another.
They're closed right now. I just don't know if they're going to be closed for the duration of the fair. I can tell you this, literally from the Associated Press breaking 3 minutes ago, the manufacturer of a thrill ride that broke apart at the Ohio State Fair in Columbus, killing one person, is ordering the rides to be shut down around the world. Dutch manufacturer KMG said Thursday that it's telling its operators to cease operations until it can investigate and learn more about what caused that malfunction. The company says there are 43 such rides around the world, including 11 traveling throughout the United States. The order doesn't impact the company's other rides. It says the accident Wednesday evening was the first such serious malfunction on one of the rides. Authorities say the 18-year-old who was killed was a high school student who had just enlisted in the Marines, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Seven others, including four teenagers, injured. Their age range is, by the way, 13 to 41, those who were injured in that road that came out, and other people were hit by debris. So they're closing that particular ride. All of them that are traveling in these various carnivals and festivals around and fairs around the world, and that's a good thing. I just wonder, what do you trust to get on if you go to the fair and they say, okay, we've all done inspections now, and the rides are back and open for business? I wonder how many people are rushing to get in line at those things.
You know, I
wouldn't be.
I could tell you for me, thinking about this one, and I don't think my wife has seen this one yet, but I'm going to end up probably telling her about this story a little later today. Point is, for me, I'm going to be a little more standoffish as my daughter gets a little older and wants to go on some of those bigger rides at those kind of fairs. And I might be, let's put it this way, I might end up being the good guy in that particular argument with myself, wife, and daughter. Let's just put it that way. I bet my wife sees this thing and be like, she's never going on any of those again.
Yeah, well, that's exactly how I'd feel about it, too. And make sure to tell her and make sure she understands exactly what it is that you're... that you're afraid of. I'm reading some of these responses from people who have, because I asked this question, as I said before, on my Facebook and on my Twitter feeds, and I'm just seeing what people think. And I just asked, how safe do you feel on these rides that are assembled in every little location they go to? They're taken apart and then reassembled in the next location. Do you feel safe? And some of them are very interesting, including Christopher, who writes, Up until last night, I felt pretty okay with it. However, after that, I don't know. All rides should be safely checked not only annually, but with each shift, and a record of all maintenance and overhauls done since those rides opened. The fact that it happened is appalling to me. It shouldn't have. Dan just says, nope, in the answer to the question, how do you feel safe on them? Michael says, not safe, and I have even less trust in those that inspect such rides. I got a response from Chris that says, I don't feel safe, and I refuse to ride them. Bill says, I remember a number of years ago when a state inspector fell to his death on a bungee jump. Wow. In the flats in Cleveland, it says.
That must have been off one of the big bridges then.
Yeah.
Because that's the only place I could think you could do a bungee jump in Cleveland around the flats. You'd have to go off one of the big bridges, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Usually when you test those things, you don't do it with bodies. You do it with, you know, weighted rocks, dummies, or whatever the case might be. But anyway, let me see a couple more thoughts on this. No, I don't feel safe. Aren't these all assembled on site, even the permanent ones? Where else would you assemble them? Yes, they are assembled on site. That's our point. And then taken apart on site and taken to the next site. I did feel safe before I got into the news business. Ignorance is bliss and dangerous. And that's true. You don't hear about these things.
Oh, yeah.
You get right on them. You get right on them. And you just, you know, you feel like this is normal and safe and everything is fine. Not after what happened, waiting to hear the full investigation as to what happened. And this one I wanted to read, Jim, before we take our bottom of the hour center timeout, from John, because it has to do with what I said a few moments ago about the people inspecting. John writes, there's usually a formula I abide by to guide me on what I ride. You take the ratio of teeth to employees and divide that by the square of the combined piercings, tattoos, and criminal records of the carnival operators and hope to get a positive number. If it's a positive number, I'll ride. If not, I won't. That is exactly what I'm talking about. And without trying to be ruthless and mean or make fun or light of a situation, that's the point that a lot of people are making. These individuals who are traveling with these carnivals are not exactly the most trustworthy individuals, let's put it that way, like I said, from a scientific and safety standpoint that you might necessarily want to look at. So there you go. That's. And by the way, speaking of safety, since I got onto this and I just felt like kind of talking about it, speaking of safety, I want to address this after the bottom of the hour. The study of 100, I believe it was 111 brains of football players that were donated by family members after their deaths, and the shocking rate of CTE that was found in those brains. I want to talk a little bit about that and what it led one NFL player to do. Literally, just 2 days after the study came out, one NFL player did something that some might call shocking. Some might call an overreaction. Some might say perfectly reasonable and logical. We're going to talk about that as we continue. After we talk about the sweet deal of the week, Jim Cushlin, we have got a sweet deal, and it's going to be on the website tomorrow morning, Friday morning at 9 o'clock on ESPN, on 106.5theticket.com. And the sweet deal this week is a $50 gift certificate to Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill in Maumee and in Franklin Park Mall. Just log on to 106.5theticket.com at 9 o'clock to pick up one of these $50 sweet deals for just $25. But you can win one now for $0 if you are the caller, let's say caller number 5. Fifth caller at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we'll hook you up with a $50 gift certificate to Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill in Maumee and Franklin Park Mall. And we're back with the final segment right after this.
Part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling onward, final segment of the program, 4:39. Thanks for being with us. Congratulations to Joe
Allure.
Allure. I couldn't tell if that was a T after the L or another L. I was going to say Altor, but it's Allure. Joe Allure of Ottawa Lake, Michigan, won the sweet deal, so congratulations to him. Don't forget, you can get one for half price, $50 for $25, tomorrow starting at 9 o'clock while supplies last at 106.5theticket.com. Hey, also another reminder, as long as we're on the contest bent here. Don't forget your opportunity to get to Charlotte and fly away. What am I talking about? ESPN 106.5 The Ticket and the Toledo Express Airport. Have it all ready for you. Just go to 106.5theticket.com, register for a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines, good toward two round-trip tickets departing from Toledo Express via Charlotte, North Carolina, then to anywhere in the continental U.S. This contest brought to you by Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Register one time at 106.5theticket.com. So a very, very cool opportunity for you there indeed. Okay, got to do this. Got to have this conversation, which I was really amazed to see what happened in the aftermath. Just a couple of days ago, you probably know if you listen to some of the national ESPN shows, that a recent study that was conducted of 202 former football players, 202 total football players, I believe 111 were former NFL players, found an extraordinarily high rate of CTE in the brains of these deceased players. CTE, of course, is chronic encephalopathy, or CTE. Now you see why they call it CTE, which is a debilitating brain disease that can only be detected after death. For whatever reason, that's the way that it is. But these athletes from the National Football League, college, and high school were studied, the brains that were turned over to this study by the families of these individuals. Now, the report, and this is important, Golic talked about this some yesterday, Jim, and I don't know if you heard it on Mike and Mike, but very, very adamant and right, correct to say this. Don't look at that headline and run screaming, oh, my God, if I play football, I'm going to have brain disease. Don't do that. It is extraordinarily irresponsible to judge this book by its cover. And the headline here And ESPN.com says CTE found in nearly 90% of brains donated by football players. It's so important to read the report. The article has a lot of very important information that puts into context those incredible numbers that you see in the headline. This has been the largest update on chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I did it that time, or CTE.
Nice.
A disease that can cause a range of symptoms, including memory loss. The report does not confirm that the condition is common in all football players. It reflects high occurrence in samples only donated to a Boston brain bank that studies CTE. Many donors or their families contributed because of their players' repeated concussions and troubling symptoms before they died. But it's important to note that the lead author, Dr. Anne McKee of Boston University, a neuroscientist there, she said there are many questions that remain unanswered. In fact, this study may ask more questions than it answers. Among those questions, how common is this? How many years of football are too many years before this would take effect? What is the genetic risk? Are you more predisposed based on your genetic or hereditary traits to this? And also, what are some of the other commonalities in the players whose brains were donated, in their lifestyle habits? How many of them used alcohol, which, as we know, kills brain cells on a regular basis? How many of them used drugs, whether they be recreational drugs, hard drugs, marijuana, which, of course, is less damaging, it would believe, but still, particularly if you use it as a young person, it kills and destroys cognitive functions that can affect you later in life when you do this as a in your brain's formative years as a teenager. How much of that played a role? How many of these athletes used steroids? What role did that play? What about their diets? All of these things may somehow contribute to the CTE that was found in each of these individual players. Some players do not have evidence of this disease despite playing long years. Many, many years. Golic himself talked about this. He's 50, what is Golic, 54, I think he said? And he said he's never had a symptom. Never any memory loss, never any cognitive delays or functions whatsoever. Dr. Monroe Cullum, who is a neuropsychologist at the UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, emphasized that this report is also based, and this is what Golic really hit on a selective sample of men who were not necessarily representative of all football players. He said problems other than CTE might explain some of their most common symptoms before death, such as their depression, their impulsivity, and their behavior changes. Which, of course, stands to reason. And as Mike was talking about, you have to understand that when a study like this is done of just brains that were donated by families of people who felt like their loved ones had brain conditions, naturally you're going to have a pretty damned high response rate here, or a high a ratio of brains that suffered or showed some brain damage or disease or degeneration. In other words, taking 200 random brains from adult men, a handful of them being football players, a handful of them being construction workers, a handful of them being accountants, a handful of them being cab drivers, you're not going to find anything even close to what you saw here, even among those football players, if it was random. Take another study of just, sadly, you have to wait until death for the CTE research to be done. Perhaps science is working on something to change that so you can look and study and find CTE in advance. But let's say you get 200 more brains now that are going to be donated from just football players, but all football players, including the Mike Golics of the world, the Steve Youngs, the Troy Aikmans, the Phil Sims. And I'm just picking broadcasters because I think we've all heard them, right, Jim?
That, yep.
These are people who do not have any kinds of cognitive issues.
Or if they do, it's sure not showing.
Issues, or I'm sorry, what?
Or if they do, it's not showing. At least not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, these are people who are extraordinarily well spoken and respected, and you can tell they haven't forgotten a thing because they're quoting statistics from their own playing days. They don't have memory issues at all. So you look at players, if you were to take 200 brains from players just all across the football spectrum, what percentage of those do you think are going to come back with evidence of CTE? Extraordinarily less than this 90% found in these brains, which were turned over to science specifically because their families felt like there might be brain damage or brain disease issues. That's huge.
Yeah. Now, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to move on to the player who did something drastic in response to this, but if you want to throw something in now, go ahead.
No, the biggest thing that I was going to throw in there, too, is, you know, as when all these things have been coming out the last couple of years, whenever there's a report like this, we seem to hear a wave of stories of, I'm not going to let my, you know, kid play football, and I'm not trying to discount that the science that these people are doing to discover these things, but you said something amongst all this that really hits it. If you want to overreact like that, I guess that's your business. But just playing a year of high school football does not mean you're going to, you know, get CTE, for example. This is longer, more exposure to it. You know, that's why as we've kind of, you know, said this or something like this before on this subject, you know, it's the longevity of how long you're playing, how deep into an NFL career, you know, for example. Because in order to get these kind of things, you have to be in the trenches for it for a long time. You're not going to get it from getting one big hit in high school when you're a junior or senior.
No,
that's not how it works.
Presumably not.
I feel whenever these things come up, we have to re-stress that part.
We do, but I will say for the sake of complete analysis and presentation here, this particular study of 202 former football players did include some from college and even some from high school. So they didn't have the prolonged college 4 years plus a number of NFL years of beatings with their heads or on their heads or whatever the case might be. There are some kids who are prone to, and I find this out as a coach, I can tell you that right now, even coaching younger kids in the junior high and in the elementary school levels. There are some kids who are prone, because of the genetic or the hereditary issues that they have, to concussions. You know, if you get smacked in the head with a volleyball, it can cause a concussion. If you get, you know, hit in what would ordinarily be a normal hit for a regular football player, for you, it may cause a concussion. And there are kids who are just high schoolers, who have had a significant number of concussions, not necessarily because they took massive hits, but it was something they were prone to. Their brains get donated here, and it's like, aha,
okay.
This. There's CTE, even in a high school player, so therefore, high school football can cause CTE. And that is a mistaken conclusion that even the doctors who ran this thing are very quick to point out.
Right.
We cannot definitively say that because these players had it to the tune of 90%, that it's a significant percentage of any kind that of other players who play in the NFL, college, or the high school level who will have the same thing. These individuals had it, and we don't know what their health situations were all about in addition to their participation in a contact sport. We don't know their hereditary conditions or their genetic predispositions. We don't necessarily know what their lifestyles were. We don't know about all those other things that I mentioned, how much of their brain disease was impacted by drug use or by alcohol use. All of these things are
right.
So important to put in there. But just to be clear, there are some high school brains that they found that had it. But as I said, we don't know what that means.
Okay.
So it's important to get that. Now.
No, good call.
To the other part of this, and this is what I really wanted to bring up, you talk about a quick response, and I can't blame him. I'm not going to try to insult the guy, but I'm like, wow, really? Offensive lineman John Urschel, 26 years old, Baltimore Ravens, retired. This is a guy who very much values his brain. He's a doctoral candidate in applied mathematics, okay? He abruptly announced his retirement from football at the age of 26 earlier today. Just before the first full team practice of training camp, and just 2 days after this CTE report came out. And this CTE report, just again for the sake of complete analysis here and presentation here, the 90% figure I gave was on the 202 total brains.
Mm-hmm.
It was 99% among the NFL brains that were donated to this scientific research. Of 111, 110 of them found some evidence, if not a lot of evidence, of CTE. That was enough for this doctoral candidate, offensive lineman, to say, I'm out. A team source said Urschel's decision was indeed linked to the results of the study. Coach John Harbaugh said he was surprised when Urschel called him 90 minutes before practice to inform him of his retirement. He said that was out of the blue. He had been working hard. He was working hard on his snaps all summer. He was doing a great job. It was definitely a lightning bolt that way. He said Urschel explained his decision, but left it up to, I'm sorry, Harbaugh said Urschel explained his decision, but he left it up to Urschel to provide those reasons himself. Quote, he said he's going to retire from football, and that was something that's been on his mind for quite a while and throughout the offseason. That's what he decided to do, and we respect John tremendously. So John Urschel followed that up as of this afternoon, 3:30, 3 p.m., literally an hour ago when we were on the air, with his statement, and he made it via Twitter. The tweet from John Urschel, and it was a copy paragraph paste thing, so it's more than 140 characters. I want to read the entire thing, if I may. Thank you to everyone for the kind words today. It wasn't an easy decision, but I believe it was the right one for me. There's no big story here, and I'd appreciate the right to privacy. I'm extremely grateful to the Ravens and blessed to have been able to play the game I love at the highest level. It is a great game. There are some more games, like the play, or I'm sorry, there are some games, like the playoff game at Pittsburgh, that I will never forget. I'm excited to start working on my doctorate in mathematics full-time at MIT. I'm looking forward to the chance to take courses that are only offered in the fall semester while spending time with my fiancé and preparing myself for the new challenges that will come with fatherhood. We're expecting our first child in December. And that's it. His Twitter feed, now his bio, describes him this way. MIT mathematics PhD student, Penn Stater, Fiona Apple enthusiast. That's it. No reference to his football career other than the profile picture, which does show him in his Ravens uniform. So why did we bring this up? Well, for the obvious reason. Everybody is wired differently. And we knew this going back to Chris Borland, the safety who played 1 year at safety for the San Francisco 49ers as a rookie and then was thought to be really, really big in their plans in their secondary the next year. And he decided, I don't want to risk concussions. I don't want to risk head injuries. And he ended his career after one season. And we see this more and more and more. And I guess I feel the need to provide all of the context with all of these guys who do this, including Urschel here, because I'm watching the game lose players for fears of these kinds of things. Parents aren't doing what I'm doing right now for you, reading the context of these reports and of these studies that are done. They're looking at this headline presented by the media. Extensive CTE study shows 90% of football players had CTE. Oh, well, that's it. Johnny, you're not playing football next year. And it's so dangerous to the health of the game because people think this is so dangerous to the health of the player. And is absolutely inconclusive by these reports. You have to have the context. Yes, one way to look at this is 90% of the players studied had CTE or brain disease after this scientific study was done. 90%. If you stop thinking right there and stop reading right there, you're never going to want to play and you're never going to let your kid play. But if you read the rest of the story, oh, well, these are 90% of the brains that were donated to a CTE study by people who felt that the memory loss and the concussions that their loved ones had meant they had brain damage. So they turned over 90 likely brain damaged brains or likely damaged brains to a study, and sure enough, 90% of them were brain damaged. Oh, what the hell does that tell? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I want this to be out there for anybody, and I know how huge high school football is in Northwest Ohio. I know how big it is in Toledo. I know what a massive deal this is, and I know how many people are impacted. My son is going to be a freshman in high school, and he's playing football, and he's been playing tackle football since he was in third grade. He would never think of not playing. And I can tell you this, I would never think of telling him not to play because I know the reality of the situation, and what is being done is a lot of fear-mongering, and it's a lot of scare-mongering, and it's working. And every time you see a John Urschel or a Chris Borland quit the NFL, it tells other people, see, even the NFL players say it's not worth the risks. Don't do it. And I want people to know that there are a series of facts that have to be considered here. Not just one fact, but you have to look at everything in context. John Urschel, if you're wondering about his history, he did indeed have a concussion in 2015. 2 years ago, he suffered a concussion after going helmet to helmet with another player, and he was knocked unconscious. He said, I think it hurt my ability to think well mathematically. It took me about 3 weeks before I was football ready, and it took me a little bit longer before my high-level visualization ability came back. Safety Eric Weddle called Urschel a great competitor and teammate, but says as a team and as a leader, you can't worry about the outside or what other individuals do. We're going to go out and play with who we have and move forward. We wish him the best and know he's going to do great things, but he's not with us, and we will have to move forward. And that is what I hope other people do. Move forward and understand what is right for this guy, and it may very well be, is not right for everybody. And when you see a study like this, please take the context into consideration. Do the homework. Do the push-ups. Read deeper past the headline. Don't be intellectually lazy and assume 90% of the players had CTE, then my kid's not playing. And I beg you, I rise up once again in defense of the sport that I love. That's it, all the time we've got. Thanks so much for listening and being a part of it. Thanks also to Justin Rogers. Thanks also to Scott Petrak, who joined us with a little training camp preview today. And thanks to Jim Cushlin for running it. Cush, you're not allowed to leave. You got to stay where you are because you got to do drive time.
Indeed.
Mr. Mike Miller coming up next. So stay where you are. Drive time is coming your way tomorrow. It's a free-for-all Friday back here on the Extravaganza at 3 o'clock. We'll see you then. Have a good one.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.